Gina Leon, and their director, Mel Tuck. And we've had Michael on the show a couple of times, and we've talked about Michael a couple of times. We've talked to him about Mel Tuck, and now we have all three of them in an interview we did earlier this week. The play is called Gruesome Playground Injuries. And just so that you know, it's going to be going on in the Culch, which is at 1895 Venable Street, which is not too far from where I live. It's going to be going on September the 8th at 7, September the 9th at 4:45, September the 10th at 8:40, September the 14th at 7, September the 16th at 5:55, and September the 17th, a matinee at 1:40. Tickets are $14, and you can get them at tickets.vancouverfringe.com. And what is this play about? Well, you don't have to ask me. You can ask them. It's coming up in a moment, that interview. Right here, an exclusive for CITR 101.9 FM.
Are you interested in Indian classical music? Sargam UBC develops a music community by organizing workshops, jam sessions, performances, and other fun activities like movie nights. We performed at various events from 2014 that comprised both Hindustani and Carnatic music. We began to host Ragini in March 2016, where we performed for 300 people, and the concert will be annual. Sargam is a club that is open to anyone who is interested in just listening or performing, and no experience is required. Sargam UBC is also interested in collaborating to make music with other clubs. Subscribe to our YouTube page and check us out on Facebook.
The Crane Library is looking for student volunteers to record textbooks for those who cannot use print at the university. If you are a UBC student who is computer literate with an ability to read university material aloud and you have a willingness to learn new techniques, we ask for a 2-hour commitment once a week. For additional information and to set up an audition, call 604-822-6114 or email crane.volunteer@ubc.ca.
You're tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM, and we're all going to be okay, because we're here with the cast and director of a very lovely play that's going to be coming up with the Vancouver Fringe Festival. We have Michael Dramont.
Hi.
Yes. And we have Gina Leon.
Hi.
And we have the legendary Mel Tuck, who we talked about last year, and we finally have him here now.
Hello.
And you guys are doing a play known as Gruesome Playground Injuries, aren't you?
Yes.
Why don't we start off with, how did this come about?
Michael applied to the Fringe to do a show, and they had certain stipulations that they wanted us to adhere to, and Michael can explain that.
We did a play at the Fringe a couple of years ago in a category called the Dramatic Works Series. We applied into this category again, and so the Fringe wanted to diversify.
They
wanted to diversify the diversity.
There you go.
As an act of diversity. The Dramatic Works Series became, all the playwrights had to be of Asian descent. And so I remembered the playwright who we knew a few years ago. We had read his plays, and this is Rajiv Joseph. And so we remembered this one, Gruesome Playground Injuries, because it's a two-hander, and it was perfect for Gina and I. That's how we ended up doing it.
And Gina, how did you end up being the perfect counterpart to this?
The story itself tracks the relationship between Kayleen and Doug, who have known each other for over 30 years. Michael and I have known each other for about 6 years now, as friends and fellow artists and actors and members of Island Productions Theatre Company. And it's the kind of play that illustrates a very intense, intimate, honest relationship between two people, and there's a lot of magic in our friendship that seemed really appropriate for the play and something that we could maximize.
The title of the play, however, suggests a slightly comic bent. So is it a comedy-based play? Is it a tragic-based play?
I think it's a little of both. I think the thing is that both these people are having difficulty connecting in their lives, and they share a sense of isolation, a sense of alienation, a sense of separation and so forth that they both understand, but they have difficulty finding ways to get it together. Mr. Joseph said that basically how far would people go to get approval, love, affection, and so forth. The play is about how far these people would go to get what they want and need in their lives. It's quite bizarre in many ways, and it's a unique love story, but it is a love story. So I think with that, you're going to definitely get comedy.
And how did you convince Mel to do it?
Mel agreed to direct this right away, but I think he had some reservations in terms of... Mel, you could explain that.
Well, as I said, we were talking about this the other day. Michael has managed to go through his life to date without having very many, if any, physical injuries whatsoever. And I don't think he's even actually been in a fight. So I, on the other hand, have had a great many of the physical injuries that we talk about in this play, and a few fights and things like that, all of which have to do with the thing that we talked about, the alienation and all this sort of thing. And so when it came down to doing this, I thought, oh, I don't know that I want to do this, but then I thought, okay, this is very illuminating in terms of not only these two people, but it's got a larger audience or perspective, and it hooked me.
Building off on the larger perspective, what's it like to play a character whose arc spans half a lifetime?
I'd say it's challenging, not only because we have to figure out of what's it like being 8, you know, 13, 23, 38. The shifts are so quick. The scene changes are a minute, and then suddenly I'm not 8 years old, I'm 23.
Yeah, and it's also, when we began this process, I said to Mel, it's a little bit like having to prepare not simply for one major arc from start to finish, but more like you've got 8 plays in one. So you have to be really well-muscled in each particular chapter in a character's journey, like you would if you were analyzing 8 different plays. The prep is you have to be much more thorough in developing character and relationships and events.
Well, there are 8 scenes in the play, and that's one of the things that she's referring to. They start out the first scene that they're 8, and then the last scene they're 38, and then the other scenes in between are different ages that they go through, each and every one of them. And in that respect, what Jean is saying, I think it's extremely valid that each one of those things is like it's a little play unto itself. Now, there is an arc, yes, as you said. I'm moving from one age to another age all the way through this. But you see, the thing that's interesting, what I was referring to earlier, what would you do to get love, affection, approval, and so on and so forth? I mean, we're touching on all kinds of intriguing questions here. Bullying, we're talking about physical abuse on certain levels, we're talking about self-abuse in terms of the fact of like things like self-damage and so forth. We're talking about all kinds of different things that people experience in their lives, and it's pretty intense, this, for these people, these two people. But the thing that's really intriguing is how much humor actually comes out of something that seems to be quite intense that way, you know? They really do go through a lot. I mean, they really do. I said to them, I don't think, and I've done a lot of material in my life, I've played Hamlet. I don't think I have ever, ever been involved in a show that is as emotionally demanding as this one.
The three of us, Gina, Mel, and I, we started Island Productions coming up on 4 years. And this is going to be our 6th show. In the past, we've always involved other people, other actors. This time around, the cast is just Gina and I, so it's the three of us kind of back to where we started. I thought that was kind of unique.
Yeah, and it means that the rehearsal process can really cater to the specifics for each of us. The story is really close to the bone for each of us. We have, I think, unique friendship alongside camaraderie as artists, and being able to work in such a small and tight group has allowed us to go to the places that the script demands in a much freer way than I think.
I met Michael about 8 years ago. He came to me as a student after he graduated from theater school. He came and started working with me at that point in time. And my late wife said, you've got to take care of this boy. He needs taking care of. So I went, okay, all right, I guess that's what I got to do. Then she passed away, and I sort of inherited him as a certain sort of like a son. Then he brought Gina to me, They had done a workshop with an American director and teacher and so forth together, and then he brought her to me, and then we went into this discussion about our artistic merit and strength and purpose and so forth. And for some reason, it just seems that this was a kind of legacy thing for me. We went on from there, and it came to be what we're doing now.
Tell us a little bit about where we can find information about this play.
We've got a website. It's island-productions.ca/stage/gruesome. That's the page for the play where we have links to where you can get tickets, interviews, photos, factoids, press release, and all that sort of stuff.
And the Vancouver Fringe Festival itself has a great user-friendly website where you can access a calendar and show times, dates, tickets for the production. September 8th to the 17th at tickets.vancouverfringe.com.
And so you feel that this production is something that you were able to really draw upon a lot of your experience that you've had as performers and as a director in order to do justice to the material?
Absolutely. Like I think we mentioned, it's pretty close to the bone for all three of us. This character and I, we share a lot of similarities. Aside from all the literal physical injuries, yeah, we're very close. Yeah, it makes me feel a little bit exposed.
I think that happens, you know, if you're good at what you do, as an actor, I think you're always going to feel a little bit naked if you get up there and do it well. But the glory and the wonder is we have this wonderful play to put on. It's like putting on a set of clothes and so forth, and so it gives us a kind of license and a freedom to behave with a certain kind of honesty or a sense of truth in terms of what we're doing. And the exposure is fine, but you have the security blanket of this play that gets you through it, you know, because the structure's there. It's been good that way. The rehearsal process has been good, too. We've had a very solid and very intense time because there's only the two of them.
It's also, it's great to be involved in telling a love story. It's universal. We have had many, many discussions under the sun about the theme of love, and we've talked about the idea that it's not falling in love sort of implies that there's a fall, there's a leap you have to take, exploring how painful the leap is for these two people has been enlightening and also humanizing. It's not easy to trust that on the other side of all this great fear is the possibility to heal in union with somebody. And I think these characters are really struggling with that particular piece.
For people who are thinking about getting into the Vancouver Fringe possibly, would you think that a play as challenging as this would be a good one to try to cut your teeth on?
I think this is perfect for the Fringe because it's fringy. I mean, it's
alternative.
It's gory. It's bloody. It's not structured chronologically. It jumps back and forth in time. It is funny. It deals with I think a lot of things that nobody wants to talk about, like self harm.
Yeah, well, self harm, the challenges of love. It deals with, you know, how history bites us in the butt, time and time again. A dysfunctional past.
Well, and also, too, there's bullying, as we said. You know, I mean, they get bullied, they are bullied, they've been bullied, they try to survive that in as best of all possible ways. I think that both these characters are somewhat more sensitive than the average bear. So as a result, the world can be pretty harsh on them. That's part of their common understanding, but it is also the thing that makes them afraid to jump in, you know, at the same time. So that's what's intriguing. I mean, it really is intriguing, and it's fun to watch this happen. And also because these two have known each other for as long as they have, and they've been really good friends for all that time, you know? I mean, and they've gone through all their ups and downs just the same as these characters, where they fought with each other, they've agreed to each other, they've rejected each other, they've ignored each other, they've done everything that everybody would do in a normal situation. And so you get to see it played out, and it's not unattractive, you know, it's not ugly. It's actually quite interesting, despite all the blood.
For me personally, the more we worked on it, the deeper and deeper and deeper it got. When we actually started working on it, I said to Gina, well, you know, I can write a play. It's not that difficult. And then the more we worked on it, the more I realized how incredibly complex and intelligent the structure is, how every single word even is important and means something. It's just such a good piece of writing. I'm blown away by the script.
When we looked at the original production, there was an actress by the name of Jennifer Carpenter, I think it is.
Yep.
And she did the original production of it. She was also the sister of Dexter on that television series where he was the serial killer. And she did this and played Kayleen. And she said, this is the gift that keeps on giving. As a writer, that is a gift. I mean, it really, truly is. And as I said, the depth that he's asked these actors to go to and to deal with, I haven't seen too often that happen, you know, so I think that's really back to reinforce Michael's point. The writing is amazing.
Yeah, and for me, the structure's been really enlightening because it's not linear. And so as we've started to embark on our run-throughs in the rehearsal process, it's very clear that nothing can be taken for granted. And also, he's laid out a really beautiful map for performers to take the leap. The equivalent would be like riding a 20-foot wave. It's kind of terrifying, but once you're on it, it's the most exhilarating feeling in the world.
Yeah.
And that a writer can give that to the artists and the actors is, it's generous, and it's why he's the man that he is.
Well, yes, he was a
Pulitzer finalist.
Pulitzer Prize finalist, so, you know, it says something about his skill and his ability, you know. And people that we've talked to, they did this show, actually, in town a few years back at Pacific Theater. I was just talking to somebody last night who knew the people had done it and said much the same thing about the demands that the play makes and how excited they were by the writing, so I agree with that.
Any final thoughts?
We're excited to share this with you. And yeah, come see the show.
And we hope that you'll fall in love with these characters in the way that we have.
Yeah. And I think the thing is that the play is a rich and exciting experience, and it's got a little bit of everything for a little bit of everybody.
Once again, a little bit of the contact info. The play will be going on September 8th, 9th, 10th, 14th, 16th, and 17th. It's going to be in the evening for most of those. The 9th is a 4:45 show. The 17th is a matinee at 1:40 p.m. Most of the rest of them are between 5:50 and 7. It's going on at the Kulch, which I live near, and it's really cool there. And you can get tickets at tickets.vancouverfringe.com, although Google will tell you that I'm wrong and they're right. Yes, you can get tickets very easily. It sounds like a wonderful, interesting time, a very emotional roller coaster ride. Well, thank you very, very much for coming out tonight.
Thank you very much, Brian.
Yes, and so we've been here with Michael Germont.
Bye.
And Miss Leon.
Thank you so much.
And Mel Tuck.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to CITR 101.9 FM.
And you are indeed listening to CITR 101.9 FM. Just a run-through of that again. The Kulch is where the play will be going on. Gruesome Playground Injuries, running from the 8th to the 17th, 8 at 7, the 9th at 4:45, the 10th at 8:40, the 14th at 7, the 16th at 5:50, and the 17th, a matinee at 1:40. Tickets are $14, and you go to tickets.vancouverfringe.com. And coming up in the bottom half of the hour, we're going to be taking a listen to something from 19 Nocturne Boulevard entitled The Temple. And so that's coming up to round off our hour of spoken word entertainment here on CITR 101.9 FM.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone.
Do you ever feel uncomfortable or unsafe walking around campus at night? There's an AMS service dedicated to helping anyone trying to get across campus alone at night. We're SafeWalk, and we have your back. Call us at 604-822-5355 to request a transfer, or check out our website at ams.ubc.ca/safewalk for more information on hours and policies.
Join Team PowerSmart. Set an energy conservation target of 10%. You'll get access to tools to help you conserve, and you can track your progress online. Visit bchydro.com/teampowersmart to join today. This message brought to you by BC Hydro PowerSmart and CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Nocturne Boulevard. Nocturne Boulevard? Not far. When you hit Howard, hang a right. Howard meets Philip at a weird kind of angle. Then you cross James and Paul. You can't miss Nocturne. It's just past the automat.
19 Nocturne Boulevard. Your address for suspenseful stories of the speculative, strange, and supernatural. Tonight's story is The Temple, which was adapted from a story by H.P. Lovecraft.
Yes? This is 19 Nocturne Boulevard. Won't you step inside? Did you have any trouble finding it?
What do you mean, what kind of a place is it?
Why, it's a U-boat at the bottom of the ocean. And the year is 1917.
Achtung! Captain Lieutenant Heinrich on deck!
Sehr gut. I have been reviewing the log regarding the sinking of the freighter Victory. And I must say that you are most definitely the single absolute most efficient U-boat crew in the Atlantic. At ease, at ease.
I myself cannot wait to view the film we took.
Yeah, yeah. The camera was off before we sank the lifeboats.
As always, Kaloy.
Most excellent. Come, Kinzer. I have a bottle of some fine schnapps. You must help me celebrate.
On 20 August 1917, I, Karl Heinrich Graf von Altenburg Ehrenstein, Lieutenant Commander of the Imperial German Navy and in charge of the submarine U-29, deposits this bottle and the record in the Atlantic Ocean at a point to me unknown, but probably about north 20 degrees latitude, on to west 35 degrees longitude, where my ship lies disabled on the ocean floor.
There was nothing like the first step out on deck after a victory, eh?
A victory? Yeah, very amusing.
Kaloise, come!
What could be so... Oh!
He must be from the Victory, sir.
Alive?
Don't be foolish, Kinzer. We are far too long submerged. He would have had a better chance if he let go and braved the waves. Remove the corpse.
Sir! His fingers are in a death grip.
Fingers break more easily than railings.
Aye, sir.
One more victim of the unjust war of aggression the English Schweinhunds are waging upon the Reich.
Truly, he is our victim. Nothing more.
You do not see the whole picture. Just like a soft-headed Rhinelander, if you are a solid Prussian like myself, what's his loss? Go and see.
What is this? Achtung! What is so very exciting?
Sir, Schmidt took something from the pocket of the dead one.
Schmidt? Would you show this to me?
It is nothing, Lieutenant.
I will judge that. Give it me. There. This is certainly something. I am confiscating it. Now put that over the side.
So?
A bauble. Ivory, I think. Looks like a classical bust, yeah?
Not a senator, though. This one is much too young and handsome.
Possibly a Kaiser?
Or a god.
It is yours if you want it. It might be valuable.
No, I have not a sentimental... What is it?
Müller, sir. It is Müller.
Müller's unconscious.
Wake him.
Ah!
Get him up here. Stations.
Are you going to talk sense now?
His eyes. His eyes.
Whose eyes? Speak sense.
Enough. Müller, tell me what is wrong.
Ja, mein Kapitän. The body. The eyes were closed, but when they rolled it over the side, they opened, and they were mocking us.
Superstitious rubbish. Müller, you have seen corpses before now, and...
Sir, but that is not all. He will not believe me.
You are under orders to speak.
Watched as the body hit the water. I saw it sink beneath the waves, and...
And?
It threw its limbs in and swam away.
You filthy lying...
Nein, Leutnant. Müller, you know this cannot be true, don't you?
But I saw...
Water is deceptive. It is strange, yeah, that the body simply sank. But that is possible due to its waterlogged condition after being held under our railing for hours. Beyond that, it is all a trick of the light.
Truly?
I will hear no more about it, yeah?
But you should keep no part of them on the ship. It is bad luck. The statue...
is nothing. It is a trinket. You go about your duties now, bosun. Superstitious Alsatian swine. Why am I surrounded by inferior?
Kaloy, do you wish that I throw the bust overboard?
Nonsense. We do not give in to fear. We are men of the 20th century. And more importantly, officers in the Kaiserliche Marine.
I could tell them I throw it.
Do not show weakness. It makes you sound unreliable.
The next day, a very troublesome situation was created by the indisposition of some of the crew. Evidently suffering from nervous strain of our long voyage, they had had bad dreams. When weather turned choppy, we descended to a depth where the sea was comparatively calm, despite a somewhat puzzling southward current which we could not identify from our oceanographic charts.
Unterengineer Rabba, here to make a report, sir.
Where is Schneider?
He is unwell, sir.
What is wrong?
He did not sleep well, sir.
What?
It is the same with many of the men, Kaloy. They are feverish and say they have had bad dreams.
If they are shirking, I will...
Sir, no. Schneider is burning up with fever, screaming all night in his berth.
Then you did not sleep well either, I suspect?
Nein, Kaloy.
Yet? Here you are, like a good sailor. Good man.
It is the idol. It is accursed.
What, Müller?
Nothing. I said nothing, sir.
He said...
I heard what he said. Müller, I will have none of this wild peasant superstitions on my ship.
You forget my noble captain. I am a commoner as well.
Bürgerstock. And they made you an officer. You must have some good qualities.
What does it matter? We are all doomed. Doomed? Because some men are sick?
Sehr gut. We must remain rational at times like these. Retain our iron German will. Kinze?
Ja, mein Captain Leutnant.
Remove Bosun Müller.
Ja, Kalle.
The moans of the sick men were decidedly annoying, but since they did not appear to demoralize the rest of the crew, we did not resort to extreme measures. It was our plan to remain where we were and intercept the liner Dacia, mentioned in the information from agents in New York.
Und was ist los? Captain Lieutenant, we must request most strenuously that you...
Is this about the knick-knack? What sort of gypsies are you to believe in such phantasms?
But what could it hurt, sir? It is surely not so valuable that it is worth risking...
What? Risking what? The only thing we are risking here is our mission.
If it all dies...
Morale, mein Captain. It is such a small thing, yet would mean so much to the men.
I see no men here.
Everyone seemed inclined to be silent now, as though holding a secret fear. Many were ill, but none made a disturbance. Lieutenant Kinze chafed under the strain and was annoyed by the merest trifle, such as the growing intensity of that southward current, which was not on our charts.
That makes seven of us. We can surely...
Müller is still in irons. He can be no help.
Müller
saw them.
Shh. None of the crazy talk, Bohin. We cannot let ourselves.
Seems, but they call to me. Their voices are like the waves, but waves that make words.
So there are six of us.
What is going on here?
We are planning a party. What does it look like?
What is happening that makes everyone so...
In the water. They are here.
Crazy.
He was in a detestably childish state and babbled of some illusion of dead bodies drifting past portholes, bodies which he recognized, in spite of bloating, as having seen dying during some of our victorious German exploits. And he said that the young man we had found and tossed overboard was their leader. This was very gruesome and abnormal.
Simon Bohim tried to leap off the deck. We had to hold him down until the madness left him, sir.
All for such a small thing.
That is what this is all about.
Just that.
Sir, Lieutenant Kienzer, Bohim is gone. He's nowhere on the ship.
It at length became apparent that we had missed the Dacia altogether. Such failures are not uncommon. And we were more pleased than disappointed, since our return to Wilhelmshaven was now in order.
This soft-headedness is not good. Morale is a result of willpower, not coddling.
Still, I too will be glad when this trip is over. That southern current we have blundered into bothers me.
It explains how we missed our target. Not every inch of the ocean is charted properly.
But it is so strong to be overlooked.
Sir?
Schneider still not feeling well?
He prefers to remain in the engine room, sir. He does not like being near portholes.
Portholes?
His dreams haunt him. But he is not impaired in his job.
Well, certainly you did not come all this way to tell us Uber-Engineer Schneider does not like portholes. Out with it.
Something fantastic has happened. The boat is surrounded by dolphins.
Dolphins?
Yeah, come and look.
How many?
They are everywhere.
Finally, something the superstitious can interpret as a good sign, yeah?
Just as we decide to return to Schlickdown, this should truly mollify them.
How fortunate.
At noon on 28 June, we turned northeastward, and despite some rather comical entanglements with the unusual masses of dolphins, we were soon underway.
Bud! Report! Someone report!
This is your fault, you swine! You made a...
Shut up! Is there anyone who can talk sense?
They have the fire out. The explosion was in the engine room. They have found no causes yet. The damage is extensive. All systems have not yet been tested, but it is certain they have no steering.
No, what about the air compressors?
They appear undamaged, but mainframe.
Yeah, what is it?
Schneider and Rabe, they were killed instantly.
That is most unfortunate.
Our situation had suddenly become very grave indeed, for though the chemical air regenerators were intact, and we could use the devices for raising and submerging the ship, and opening the hatches as long as compressed air and storage batteries might hold out, we were powerless to propel or guide the submarine.
What is it you think you are doing?
He demands it. He will not let me sleep until it is returned to him.
What's this?
A mutiny, Kelloy.
Can we do without Schmidt, short as we are of hands?
With no engines to maintain, I must always find makework for the men. They will go mad. They are restless if left sitting on their hands.
German lives are precious. But the constant raving of Schmidt concerning a terrible curse was most subversive of discipline, so drastic steps were taken. The crew
accepted the event in a sullen fashion.
A ship! A ship! We are delivered!
Excellent. You see, Kinsa? It is never so dark as there is no light. Come along.
Give me the glasses.
But it is a ship, Lieutenant. Isn't that enough?
Glasses now.
Was ist?
Yankees.
But surely surrender is better than death.
Zimmer.
Ja, Captain Lieutenant.
Prepare to dive. We did not descend far. After several hours, we decided to return to the surface. However, the ship failed to respond to our direction, in spite of all that the mechanics could do. Some of the men began to mutter again, but the sight of an automatic pistol calmed them.
Kaloy, the men are very restless. They fear the worst, being trapped and drifting. They blame us for making a bad decision.
It was the only decision to make. None but a weakling would surrender to the Yankees.
Any man may turn weak in such conditions.
No Prussian. And if I must be the backbone so my crew can stand straight as men, so be it.
The men are restless, angry.
If they will not stand, then I will put them down and stamp their bodies into pulp fit only to paint the wars. It was about 5 a.m. that a general mutiny broke loose. The six remaining pigs of seamen, suspecting that we were lost, suddenly burst into a mad fury, roared like the animals they were, and broke instruments and furniture indiscriminately. Lieutenant Kinsa seemed paralyzed and inefficient, as one might expect of a soft, womanish Rhinelander. Get up.
Did you... Was that necessary?
You saw them. Now stand. We need to clean house.
What do you plan to do?
Others. Put them out. We can't keep them here or stink up the place.
We can use the top hatch.
Yeah, yeah. Make sure they're all dead, will you?
Will you? This will be easier with two.
So would killing them, but I had to handle that. This is your part. Let me know when you need help getting them up into the hatch. Our compasses, depth gauges, and other delicate instruments were ruined by the rampage of those swine. Henceforth, our only reckoning would be guesswork, based on our watches, the calendar, and our apparent rate of drift.
Look at this.
Yeah, more dolphins. Very exciting.
No, no, this one here. See the one with the scar?
Yeah.
How deep are we, did we determine?
Too deep for dolphins, certainly, but...
I have been watching this one in the searchlight for 2 hours now, and he has not left our side. Delphinus delphis is a cetacean mammal, unable to subsist without air.
Perhaps they are magic dolphins. I'm not interested in them until we run out of other rations.
It is a very important discovery. Perhaps a new subspecies.
I'm sure the dolphins will be fascinated when you present your paper to them.
With the passage of time, Kinsa and I decided that we were still drifting south, meanwhile sinking deeper and deeper. I could not help observing, however, the inferior scientific knowledge of my companion. His mind was not Prussian, but given to imaginings of no value.
Fabulous, isn't it?
Sunken ships? Interesting, yes, but fabulous? What else are you likely to find on the ocean floor?
No, no, look there, to the right. You see, that peak, it is...
A rock.
No, it is too regular for a rock. You will see when we get closer.
Wake me when you can see it, then. I think I will have some sleep.
You don't care?
Yeah, yeah. Do you wish me to remain?
We have lost our escort.
Was?
Your beloved dolphins. They finally abandoned us.
I am more surprised that they remained with us for so long.
What are we to do?
Do? About the dolphins? I'm sure they can take care of themselves.
You know what I mean. What are we to do when we run out of everything?
That is days, perhaps weeks away. Why waste angst?
But there is no hope. We must die.
Everyone must die.
We could try and get to the surface. One of us in the diving suit.
And how deep did we decide we were?
Very deep.
If you want to take the suit and try to get to the surface, you are welcome. But you know what will happen.
It is possible to survive Kayson's disease, even drastic decompression.
As a cripple? With joints that never work without pain? With skin so damaged no one can look you in the face? Perhaps paralyzed even? Incontinent? Better to die as a man than live as a beast. Of course, you might be lucky and have an embolism on the way up and then ride the waves as a corpse.
My mind was tired, but I am always a German, and was quick to notice that the U-29 was standing the deep-sea pressure splendidly. Our southward speed, as gauged by the ocean floor, was about as I had estimated from the organisms passed at higher levels.
Yeah, plenty of air and food, but this... as forever.
Not at the rate you're abusing it.
I cannot lose myself in study as you do. What is the point? So you know so much more before you die.
It is not impossible. We will encounter another U-boat.
Wake up, Carl. This boat, it is our tomb. We are dead men. All we have left to do is lie down.
Go to bed, Leundent. There is no point in talking when you are a total blow.
You are going to give me orders yet? What if I disobey? You clap me in irons? You will shoot me?
I will remind you, you are a man, a trained soldier, and an officer of the Kaiser's Navy. And as such, you should have the will to face death.
I am a soldier, yeah. I can face death in battle. It is this lingering, drifting fate that horrifies me. It is like having a fatal disease. You know you must die, but you cannot know when.
Very well, then. More air for me.
The fact of our coming death affected Kienzer curiously. I was very sorry for him, for I dislike to see a German suffer. But he was not a good man to die with. For myself, I was proud, knowing how the fatherland would revere my memory.
He's calling! He's calling!
What is wrong?
We must go. He will not call forever.
Calm down. Remember yourself, man.
Was? Can I?
There you are. You were having a nightmare. Now you are better.
No.
Was?
It was not a dream. It was a voice. I still hear it, you see. I still hear him. He calls to me, to us. I don't know why you cannot hear him.
You are still drunk or deluded.
I am not, truly. If you do not believe me, look outside and you will see his face. It is right in front of us.
Vas, show me. Ah, blackness. Precisely what is between your ears.
The searchlight. Come on, Z. There. There.
My God.
I am not given to emotion of any kind, but my amazement was very great indeed when I saw what lay revealed in that electrical globe. And yet, as one reared in the best culture of Prussia, I should not have been amazed, for geology and tradition alike tell us of great transpositions in oceanic and continental areas. What I saw was an extended and elaborate array of ruined edifices, all in various stages of preservation.
Atlantis! And we Germans have discovered it! This is stupendous!
He is out there! His temple lies still before us, and he watches us from afar.
You saw this in your dreams?
He told me. He should go.
Go? Where?
To him! Come now, do not wait until later. It is better to repent and be forgiven than to defy and be condemned.
You think we should go outside? We have only one diving apparatus.
A suit. We need no suits. He will gather us to him.
You have finally crossed into madness. I will find you some medication.
You cannot cure this with your science, Carl. You are so sensible, and what does it get you? Nothing. Nothing. Come now, or there will be nothing left for you.
You are mad.
If I am mad, it is a blessing. May the gods pity the man who, in his carelessness, can remain sane to the hideous end. Come and be mad whilst he still calls with mercy.
As he spoke, he took his ivory image from the table, pocketed it, and seized my arm in an effort to drag me up the companionway to the deck. When that did not work, he fled. In a moment, I heard the grind of the first hatch and understood that he meant to open them both, exposing the U-29 to the water outside. A vagary of suicidal and homicidal mania for which I was scarcely prepared.
One more move, and I shoot.
Shoot! I have nothing to fear. He will welcome me.
Did I say I would kill you? I will shoot you in the leg and clap you in irons.
You would do that?
Yeah. But I'm not one to hold a man back. If you wish to go, go. I will even run the hedges for you.
Why?
Further, I will watch and make sure he finds you once you are adrift.
But you will not come with me?
Nein. I have things yet to accomplish.
Very well. But he will not be pleased with you if you ignore his summons.
After I saw Kintza was no longer in the boat, I threw the searchlight around the water. I wished to ascertain whether the water pressure would flatten him as it would theoretically do, or whether the body would be unaffected like those extraordinary dolphins. I did not, however, succeed in finding my late companion, for owing to the abruptness of the change of angle, wire was disconnected, which necessitated a delay of many minutes for repairs. Alone. To survive until I die. Very well.
One more victim of the unjust war of aggressions, English Schweinhunds of aging upon the right.
I must be careful now how I record my awakening today, for I am unstrung, and much hallucination is necessarily mixed with the fact. Psychologically, my case is most interesting, and I regret that it could not be observed scientifically by a competent German authority.
You are a solid Prussian like myself?
Upon opening my eyes, my first sensation was an overmastering desire to visit the rock temple that stood before the now stationary U-29.
No, I have not...
A desire which grew every instant, yet which I automatically sought to resist. Huh? What is this? Light? Where is this coming
Do
from?
Do not show weakness.
Could it
make
be?
It sound unreliable.
Yeah? Another ship? Port side. Aha. Oh.
Superstitious rubbish.
It is light. It is well that the reader accept nothing which follows as objective truth. For the events are necessarily the subjective and unreal creations of my overtaxed mind.
All trickles alike.
When I attained the conning tower, I found the sea in general far less luminous than I had expected. But the door and windows of the undersea temple, hewn from the rocky hill, were vividly aglow with flickering radiance, as from a mighty altar flame far within.
What sort of gypsies are you, believe in such phantoms?
The light showed that the friezes, which covered the front of the temple, clearly carved from the solid rock of the cliffside, depicted many repetitions of but one face. The same face as the ivory bust which Kintza had carried back to the sea with him.
I will have none of this wild peasant superstitions on my ship.
The rest is very simple. My impulse to visit and enter the temple has now become an inexplicable and imperious command, which ultimately cannot be denied.
Do not show weakness. It makes you sound unreliable.
My own German will no longer controls my acts, and volition is henceforth possible only in minor. This soft-headedness is not good. Morale is a result of willpower, not coddling.
When first I saw that I must go,
it is most unfortunate.
I prepared my diving suit, helmet, and air regenerator for instant donning.
Of course, you might be lucky and have an embolism on the way up, and then ride the waves as a corpse.
And immediately commenced to write this hurried chronicle in the hope that it may someday reach the world.
Why waste angst?
I shall seal the manuscript in a bottle and entrust it to the sea as I leave the U-29 forever.
This is your part.
I have no fear, not even from the prophecies of the madman Keen.
Better to die as a man than live as a beast.
What I have seen cannot be true. And I know that this madness of my own will, at most, lead only to suffocation when my air is gone.
I will remind you, you are a man, a trained soldier, and an officer of the Kaiser's Navy. And as such, you should have the will to face death.
The light at the temple is a sheer delusion. And I shall die calmly like a German in the black and forgotten depths.
Ah, blackness. Precisely what is between your ears.
This demonic laughter which I hear as I write comes only from my own weakening brain.
You have finally crossed into madness. I will find you some medication.
So, I will carefully don my suit and walk boldly up the steps into the primal shrine. That silent secret of unfathomed waters and uncounted years.
Hold a man like if you wish to go. You wish to go.
Go, go, go.
Now that you know how to find us, don't be a stranger. We have enough of those already. Tonight's episode, The Temple, was adapted by Julie Hoverson from a short story of the same name by H.P. Lovecraft. In this episode, Captain Leutnant Heinrich was played by Rick Lewis, Leutnant Kienzer was played by Julie Hoverson, and the rest of the crew was ably portrayed by Sean Connor and Brian Hendrickson. Additional Walla was provided by the cast of Pickens Rock. Also heard, Cole Hornaday, Renaud LaBeouf. All music in this show was courtesy of Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Sound effects were found on Soundsnap.com and Sonomic.com. Sound and mastering was done by Julie Hoverson. This was recorded at Neo Hoodoo Studios with the assistance of Ryan Hurst. Please note, all discrepancies between U-boats as portrayed in the story and as portrayed in reality are pretty much the fault of Lovecraft. I stuck with what he wrote, regardless of whether it was historically accurate, and I apologize for that. And my thanks to Scott Glancy, president of Pagan Publishing, for his willingness to point out these discrepancies, regardless of whether I used his advice or not. Thank you! All persons, places, and events in this story are fictitious or used in a fictitious manner and are not meant to reflect any persons, places, or things, living, dead, or undead. Questions? Comments? We would love to hear from you at 19nocturne@live.com, that's 19nocturne, or check out our website at 19nocturneboulevard.com or .net. This presentation is copyright 2009 to Julie Hoverson and Weality Productions.
Old or New Testament?
I think the New Testament.
The question is, Pilate. Remember Pilate from the New Testament?
Pontius Pilate. He fiddled while...
Yeah, no, well, just a minute. Let me ask the question, then you can give me the answer, okay? Did Pilate want Jesus to be crucified?
Pontius Pilate washed his hands of it.
So did he want him to be crucified?
Yeah.
No. No. No.
Well, tune in every Friday afternoon, 3:30 to the Night Watch Show. What's your job?
Well, find a good church. It'll help you.
And you are indeed tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM. And tonight we had
there's
the cast.
There's only one way that old plunker is going to make you feel good again.
Injuries.
Donate it to
that was Gina
Canada.
Leon, Michael
Check
Germont,
free towing
and
or
the
pick
director,
up of your old vehicle.
Coming up in a moment, we're going to have Canada Post Talk with John. So from
online
all of us here at CITR 101.9 FM, have a
get
safe
rid of that old vehicle and feel good about supporting real solutions for change in your community. Donate your old or used vehicle to Bullying Canada today. Full